one, Yasser Abdul Ghani versus Mulcasey. Mr. Block.
Good morning, Your Honors, distinguished counsel, and may it please the court. I'm Attorney Harold Block, and I represent the petitioner in this action, Mr. Yasser Abdul Ghani. Mr. Abdul Ghani arrived in the United States in August of 2000 on a visitor's visa, and he had obtained that visitor's visa through a method other than the one that is supposed to be utilized to arrive in the United States. Subsequently, he was contacted by the FBI and the Bureau of Diplomatic Security Agency relative to getting information as to how he managed to obtain the visa. The visa was issued as a valid visa from the U.S. Consulate Office in Doha, Qatar, but it was not obtained legally. He indicated readily that he had paid a gentleman in Jordan, actually a relative in Jordan, to obtain this visa for him, Mr. Samir Hamad. And Mr. Hamad did, in fact, obtain this visa. Subsequently, Mr. Abdul Ghani identified the gentleman, indicated what had happened. He also gave the identity of 9 other individuals who had obtained visas in the same way by payment of money to Mr. Hamad. Mr. Abdul Ghani was placed into removal proceedings by virtue of having obtained a visa through misrepresentation, and we filed for him and on his behalf an application with the immigration judge for asylum, withholding of removal, and Convention Against Torture Relief. At an individual hearing in the immigration court, the immigration judge discounted the argument that this gentleman should be eligible for asylum rather than simply withholding a removal.
Actually, before the judge did that, there was a jurisdictional question about the timeliness of the asylum application.
That's
the
correct.
Judge ruled against you on
That's
that,
correct.
Which
mm-hmm.
raises a jurisdictional issue for us, which no one has addressed. So if you would start with that.
Well, I will say this. When the board issued their ruling, I believe it's clear from the decision that the board did acknowledge that the changed circumstances that were, in fact, argued as a reason for the retention of the one-year limit was, I believe the board indicated it was a valid argument. I believe they acknowledged it.
Actually, the board assumed without deciding the issue of changed circumstances.
I'll agree with Your Honor that it's an ambiguous statement. I'm not quite certain how one could completely interpret it. I believe that the government, in their responsive brief, indicated that they felt that the board had proceeded in that fashion. And quite frankly, I believe that that's really a critical element in the case insofar as the burden of proof to sustain a claim. Because, of course, if, in fact, it's a claim for asylum and it retains the ability for asylum, then you have the well-founded fear standard of burden of proof for demonstrating eligibility, whereas if you aren't eligible for asylum and only for withholding, you have the clear probability standard, which is much stricter.
Right. I understand the difference that it makes on the merits, but we don't have jurisdiction consider the issue of whether changed circumstances or extraordinary circumstances excuse a late filing.
I understand.
So we wouldn't even get to the merits on the asylum claim unless this threshold has gotten over. And you're making a merits-based argument, which is different.
I would respond to that, Your Honor, by saying that the board, in fact, did and again, it was an ambiguous wording, but they did, in fact, indicate that they believed that there was a case made for the 1 year, and I believe jurisdiction then is involved here and does remain by virtue of the fact that the board appears to have proceeded with that understanding.
But the problem is the board said even accepting that he satisfied the requirements of 1208, defining changed circumstances, he doesn't establish his eligibility for relief. So, in other words, they really didn't reach the jurisdictional question. So I agree with Judge Sykes. I have some concerns whether we even have jurisdiction. So speak to that, why we have jurisdiction.
Well, again, my response to that would be that I believe you have jurisdiction because I believe that the board, although they didn't state it unequivocally, did in fact state that it was an asylum case, and therefore that the jurisdiction is established by that, and the appeal on the petition for review on the decision proceeds and flows from that.
Why don't you spend a little time on the merits here, assuming that we sure. either find there's jurisdiction or I suppose we could also remand this back to the board for determination whether the petition was timely, but let's just talk about the merits a little bit.
All right. Well,
where is the government action here that would permit a finding of withholding of removal or asylum?
The Jordanian government action?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I believe that is the case for that is made out by virtue of the fact that this gentleman, Samir Hamad, was an individual who had a very special set of privileges in Jordan, which is a relatively small country, that Jordanian citizens don't typically have. As indicated in the testimony, this gentleman had the ability to have a gun in his possession. Sometimes he carried it, sometimes he had it in his vehicle. He was able to and had demonstrated in the presence of the petitioner an ability to essentially ignore the police or even to be abusive to the police without any ramifications whatsoever. He had a diplomatic passport, which individuals do not have. It provides special types of privileges for individuals that have them. He was never, as far as we know, in any official way, an employee or a governmental official. But the fact that he had a diplomatic passport and the fact that he used this diplomatic passport to go in and out of the country implies a very special standing in the eyes of the government. And it is our position that when an individual seems to have the ability to act with impunity in a number of ways through past individual circumstances, that it certainly implies a condemnation on the type of activity and behavior of that individual by the government. He didn't seem to ever have to account for anything. And so in that respect, we believe that it ties in on the basis of condemnation, if you will, by the government of Jordan in not riding herd on things that he did that typically Jordanians would not be allowed to get away with. And in that regard, I believe clearly that this heightens the legitimacy of the fear or apprehension of the petitioner. I guess that I'm now going into the possibility of rebuttal time. So if you have no further questions, I'll wait until I have that opportunity.
Mr. Cantor.
Good morning. Ethan Cantor, representing the Attorney General.
What if the board did just assume jurisdiction without deciding here, and we thought that that was inappropriate, that we question our jurisdiction, wouldn't the remedy then just be to send it back to the board for its determination of whether there were changed circumstances?
Well, I think the jurisdictional bar that's applicable with respect to the court's review is that it not review a decision of the board as to the timeliness determination, which, and I think the court is reading it correctly, it assumed really without deciding because in its view Mr. Abdulghani had not established eligibility for either asylum or withholding. He's waived his CAT claim before this court. So I think that the only circumstance
well,
under...
We're more persnickety about the jurisdiction here, obviously. And I know sometimes it's easier to say, assume there is jurisdiction, you can't win on the merits. I think that's what the board essentially did here.
I think that's what it did, and I think that in the federal courts, the hypothetical jurisdiction has now been viewed unfavorably. How I think the court should consider this case is if it were to find, if it were to reverse the board on its merits determination, it would have to remand to the board to decide the timeliness issue with respect to asylum. Because that is a determination that the board obviously sidestepped. So if you were to reverse on withholding.
So you're saying we should reach the merits even if we don't have jurisdiction.
I think you have to reach the merits at least with respect to withholding. I think you can... I think that your view of the merits on asylum can certainly inform your consideration of withholding. If you do not believe you have jurisdiction to address asylum, it still informs the question, because if he wouldn't be eligible for asylum, then clearly he wouldn't be able to establish withholding.
But your position is that we do have jurisdiction mm-hmm. to review the asylum denial because the BIA assumed without deciding.
Because the board decided the merits of the asylum issue. And it is the board's decision that this court reviews.
So you say implicit in that decision is a finding by the board that the asylum application was timely?
No.
You're not saying that.
We have jurisdiction to review a non-decision decision. Is what you're saying?
If you... That does not sound right, does it?
That's what it sounds like.
You've persuaded me that the court lacks jurisdiction over the timeliness issue.
If we can put it this way. We have jurisdiction. We wouldn't have jurisdiction if the timeliness decision had gone the other way. But we do have jurisdiction because the issue was just assumed and the board plowed ahead to the merits.
That's right. If the board had found timeliness, but I...
No, if the board had found...
It did not find timeliness.
If the board had found the application to be untimely, in other words, affirmed the threshold
then
decision...
Then the court would lack jurisdiction over
right.
that decision.
Okay.
Right.
But
that's
not
right.
the opposite.
Right.
That's maybe a more positive way of stating
okay.
a position.
I like that one.
Okay. We'll go with that one.
And we'd still have jurisdiction over the withholding decision.
Yes.
Okay, now the merits.
We get so jumbled up in these jurisdictions. The merits are more interesting.
On the merits, the court should uphold the board for any number of reasons. The board found that the activities, the conduct in this case, didn't rise to the level of persecution, and I can address each of the elements. But in brief...
Well, why don't you address his major point, which is Hamad and the special privileges he had with the embassy. I mean, that Hamad...
Well, that goes to... That would go to whether he held a well-founded fear of persecution by Hamad, either on the basis of political opinion or his membership in a particular social group. The board was correct in its determination that there is no government nexus, and there must be in order to find eligibility for a claim that's based on the notion that the government is either the persecuting actor or in some sense goes along with it. In Wang, this court's decision in Wang, cited in my brief, the court noted the government... persecution is something that the government does or somehow abets, essentially throwing its lot in with the deeds of the private actor. I believe the board was correct here in finding there's no evidence that the Jordanian government is throwing its lot in with Hamad in any sense of the matter. I think the one incident sole incident cited as evidence that Mr. Hamad has a government connection or is allowed free rein is this incident with the traffic cop. However, that is far, far removed and remote, and certainly not compelling evidence that he has free rein. Indeed, what Mr. Abdelghany concedes is that the government of Jordan arrested Mr. Hamad. They detained him and then released him. That may go, one can only speculate as to the reasons why, but the arrest itself is certainly a contrary indication that Mr. Hamad has complete free rein and is immune in any sense from a government restraint. The possibility of drawing two inconsistent conclusions from the evidence does not preclude this court's upholding the board if it has substantial evidence to support its position. And indeed, there is much, much evidence. Concessions by the Abdelghany family, each of the witnesses says, look, he's something big. He comes from a rich family. They own a publishing company. But no one stated he is a government official. No one stated that he has government status. Therefore, there is substantial evidence to support the board's conclusion that there is none of the required government nexus, much less any notion that there is a social group, that this persecution that he fears would be inflicted on the basis of a protected ground in the act, either political opinion. There is no political opinion being expressed against the Jordanian government, and there is no discrete social group of the type that the board has required must have some social visibility, regarded as such by other members in the community. In this case, Mr. Abdelghany has defined a social group of one, himself. And the board and the decisions of the federal courts are quite clear that you cannot have that circularity of definition, which is to define the group solely on the basis of some feared persecution. If the court has any questions about the theory of religious persecution, I can address that as well. But essentially, Mr. Abdelghany's case is also lacking in a nexus to a protected ground in that case, as well as a government nexus, where, and I think his case stands in stark contrast to the one he last cited in his reply, I believe it is Bakdor, involving Coptic Christians in Egypt, where in that case there was both background evidence to establish official hostility by the Muslim majority against the Coptic Christian minority, plus specific instances in which the police stood by and actually watched as Mr. Bakhtor's family was assaulted. In this case, the administrative record lacks both. The record shows that the Jordanian government and police prosecute crimes that are motivated by this honor, sense of honor, where a family might strike out against an individual who marries outside of the faith. In this case, in particular, there is no evidence that police assistance was ever sought, much less when sought, refused or denied. So on that basis, I think the court, in addressing the merits, must uphold the board. My time has expired. If there are no further questions, I'll rest. Thank you.
Luck, anything further?
The government has used the Wang case as an argument that this case cannot qualify and this petitioner cannot qualify in the social group class, but the Wang case is distinguishable from this because in the Wang case, the individuals who the petitioner had contended constituted a danger to her had no arguable, no alleged, no special standing whatsoever with the government in China. And essentially, there was really no attempt at connecting that kind of a profile. In our case, clearly, again, it's our position, and we believe that the evidence clearly shows that this gentleman had special privileges, special contacts, and I think that's not something that can be just dismissed out of hand. The board indicated that the claim was too speculative. The problem is that, again, the board continues to use the burden of clear probability rather than well-founded fear or reasonable fear. And I believe that's essential and critical. I feel that if the court believes that they don't have the jurisdiction on deciding whether asylum was a viable alternative, that a remand to have a clarification from the board might be a reasonable way to deal with it. And perhaps then we could be certain that when they were evaluating the judge's conclusions, that they would do so using the appropriate standard.
Okay.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement. We'll proceed to the second.